for joining us for NASCAR's annual State of the Sport here at Phoenix Raceway. Also, welcome to those of you on the live stream, as well as those on NASCAR Radio on Sirius XM. My name is Eric Ryan, Vice President of Corporate Communications for NASCAR. I'm joined, of course, by NASCAR President Steve Phelps and Chief Operating Officer Steve O'Donnell. As we conclude our 74th season with new champions here in the Valley, we have a moment to reflect on this extraordinary season and begin to look ahead to our diamond anniversary next year with our 75th. On behalf of my colleagues across NASCAR, I want to thank everybody here for your continued engagement in this sport, for supporting our ultimate goal of exciting the fans. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, Steve, for your opening remarks.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to have a few remarks, as Eric said, to kick things off, and then Steve and I will answer any questions that you have. First, I want to thank all of you for being here. Certainly exciting. We've got four deserving challengers for the championship this evening and tomorrow and on Sunday. So we wish all the competitors good luck. We've got a potential repeat winner this evening with our friend Ben Rhodes. Well, it's a good start so far. So, and Ben has been a deserving champion, and but it's great to have three challengers there. Tomorrow we will crown a new champion in the Xfinity Series, and then we have two drivers that are going for their second championship and two that are new. So really exciting storylines, and that's what you guys do, and you do so well. So for many of you, Steve and I get to see you at the racetrack every week. Others of you, we see you less than that, but it's all important. What you do for our sport to bring those storylines to life to our race fans is really important. So I want to thank each and every one of you for what you do. It is important. Obviously, I have a friend up here in Steve O'Donnell, who's our Chief Operating Officer. This is the first time Steve has joined me here. I'm excited to have Steve here, not because it was his birthday yesterday, but because of all the great things. Oh, did I mention that it was Steve's birthday yesterday? Happy birthday, Steve. We won't sing for you this time. But I do think, Steve deserves to be up here. He's worked incredibly hard. He's been a longtime employee of NASCAR. And under his direction, he's done some terrific things, and I'll get into that in some of my opening. But I thought it would be appropriate for Steve to be up here with me. Kind of the meat of the matter about what I want to talk about, is the successes that this sport has had. We're about to conclude our 74th season, and what a terrific season it's been in 2022. I'll get to that in a second. But I thought it would be appropriate to actually take a step back. Many of you were in the room in Miami when I had the opportunity to do this for the first time. And I think we're at that particular time, we're a sport that, frankly, was struggling. Our ratings were down. Our attendance was down. There weren't a lot of bright spots. And I stood in front of you and I talked about our best days being in front of us. I know that seemed kind of foolish, and maybe some of you were snickering. It's like, I'm not sure that's going to happen. But where we sit here today, I think that's exactly what's happened. And I think you look at 2019, our ratings were up. Our attendance was up in 2019. 2020, we started the season off with a sitting president at the Daytona 500, and then the extraordinary events of Ryden Newman at the end of that race, and how scary that was. But you look at the first four races of that year, our ratings were up, and then COVID hit. And, COVID was a brand new world for us. And on March 13th, when we closed down, right, and shut down our operations and sent everyone home from Atlanta, that following Monday, Steve and other senior members of the team, we sat down in Daytona Beach, Florida, and we devised a plan or started to architect a plan that would get us back to racing, which is exactly what we did. And that was a very scary time, those 71 days and what our industry did to come back and collaborate to get back to be the first sport competing which is what we did on May 18th at Darlington. Initially without fans, and then the first sport back to competing with race fans when we went to Miami, Homestead Miami Speedway, and then on to Talladega. But it was the events that, bless you, Jenna, the events that happened in June of 2020, I think, set the course of NASCAR to change where the sport was from a reputation standpoint and from a relevance standpoint. And that was the stance on social justice. It's interesting. We just had Jimmy Johnson here. What terrific news having Jimmy come back in the ownership position he's taking to Petty GMS. And it's great to have Jimmy back. But Jimmy led a group of drivers to create a video that talked about learning, being educated, doing better with respect to understanding what was happening in this country and kind of the reckoning that was happening. And Jimmy gave permission for the sport to come out and do the things that we did and say the things that we did. And that changed the face of this sport forever. And you look at the results that have happened just in 2020, frankly. New ownership with Michael Jordan and Pitbull and others, frankly. People of color are coming to the sport. Our own hiring practices and what we've done, you know, what has happened throughout the garage and drivers of like a Daniel Suarez winning this year, a Bubba Wallace winning again this year. It's important, and it's changing the face of the sport as we move forward. And you can do that without taking away from what's happening with your existing fans who have been here for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, because they want great racing. They want storylines. They want their drivers to win. They want us to serve them content that is interesting, unique, and special. And that's what we've done while we've been able to serve this new fan. So finished 2020. I think it was a terrific year again. Attendance was a bit wonky because we had limitations on, like, we're here 2 weeks, 2 years ago. I think we had 11,000 fans, right? Last year we were packed. This year we sold out of the Sunday race in March. 2021 was a special year in that we had the boldest schedule ever, or at least in 50 years in NASCAR. And that really defined NASCAR doing things boldly and differently than they've done before. And that also added to the reputation and the relevance of the sport. And that is something that continued as we looked at, by the way, the ratings were strong and attendance was up again versus 2019. Then you fast forward into 2022. Yes, I am getting to the end because we're doing this chronologically. And I think the thing that I was struck by is you think of the Clash at the Coliseum and the importance of what the Busch Light at the Clash of the Coliseum, what it meant to the sport. It was a proof point for that we could do something like that, right? That we could build a track inside a stadium and certainly an iconic one. That was important for us. And again, it showed being bold and being innovative and being relevant. The biggest thing to me, and that was incredibly important, and frankly, I've never been in a NASCAR race where every single person that you talk to in this industry, drivers, fans, everyone had a smile on their face. Everyone. It was unbelievable. Never seen that in a NASCAR race. Someone's complaining about something. I mean, right? Not there. But importantly, it was the next-gen car and the introduction of the next-gen car that was so important. If you consider that before this year in the next-gen car, you had to have a relationship with one of five race teams if you wanted to come into this sport. You had to. This car changed that. So what does this car do? There was a relevance to this car for our OE partners. The styling was fantastic of this car. And then the question would be, well, what's the raceability of the car? And the raceability of the car was such that it resulted in 19 different winners, so more than half the field, won a race in NASCAR this year. 5 first-time winners. More green flag more passes throughout the field in a single season. By the way, that happened 4 weeks ago. So I would say the racing has delivered. It's been terrific. I did want to touch on one thing relative to the safety of the vehicle. I'm sure there's going to be a question that's going to come from one of you. The car was designed as safety is the number one priority for that car. That's how it was designed. And it was designed to make sure that the horrific situation that we saw with Ryan Newman of the Daytona 500 and the intrusion that happened into his vehicle, or the crushed roof that happened with Joey Logano at Talladega, that those things needed, the strength of the car needed to be there. And that is something that was first and foremost into why that car was designed. So I would say, and I want to give a public shout out to Steve O'Donnell and his team, nothing short of spectacular, and what a bold play, right? So a year ago, I think someone asked me, what keeps you up at night? The car kept me up at night. Whether we could put that car on the racetrack at the Clash of Coliseum. You've had supply chain issues and all the rest of it. And if you think about it, get to the Clash of the Coliseum and you don't have a race car, there's no safety net. You can't go back to the old, it's gone. It's too late. You're done. We wouldn't race. And I know that sounds dramatic, but if you think about it, there was no safety net, no wires. It was our car. It needed to be on the racetrack. And then working with the race teams and the drivers, we'd make sure the car was as racy as it could be. And I think it delivered against that too. As you look forward to our 75th season, more exciting news. For the first time in our 75-year history, we are going to race a street course. And not just any city. We're going to race in Chicago. And not at the outskirts of Chicago. We are going to be in downtown Chicago. On Lake Michigan, right? On Lakeshore Drive and on Michigan Avenue and on Columbus. And it's going to be unlike any NASCAR race ever, not just because it's on the street course, but because of what we are going to do around the development and the hospitality of that racetrack. It will look nothing like any NASCAR race we've ever had. And as a race fan, I'm incredibly excited about that. You know, as we think about the raceability of the vehicle, and you think about the playoffs, we had three winners that were not part of the playoffs win our first three races in the round of 16. The round of 12, and a special shout out for Christopher Bell, for what he did at the Roval, incredibly unexpected, as he would say, I didn't have the fastest race car there, but they went out and won that race. And then you go to Martinsville. And he has another walk-off win, unprecedented in the history of NASCAR and this how we race our playoffs, unprecedented. Certainly overshadowed a bit by Ross's move, understandably, because no one had ever seen anything like that ever. But I wanted to make sure that Christopher Bell got his due because he did something extraordinary. And he deserves to be in the championship four, as do the other drivers. So... again, thrilled for where the sport is, thrilled for where the sport is going, as we head into our media rights negotiation next year, as we head into, kind of uncharted territories with the Chicago Street Course, and we're going to continue to be bold, and we're going to continue to be innovative. And what I would finish with is what I finished with in Miami, which is, I believe, the best days of NASCAR are in front of us. I believe that to be true. With that, Steve and I will be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay, we've got microphones, so just wait until the microphone gets to you, but I'll call you out. We'll start with Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic.
The Athletic. communications been with the drivers has been a hot topic this year, or the lack thereof. We know that since Talladega, the lines of communication have been more opened up. What I'm curious is why was there a communication breakdown before Talladega and the process that went into that, and why there was this disconnect between drivers and the league?
You know, Jordan, I'll take this one. Jordan, I think, you know, Steve and others at NASCAR with Jeff Burton is kind of an advisor, and Kyle Petty and Dale Jarrett and a group of seven drivers plus their counterparts at NASCAR developed something this year called the Driver Advisory Council. And that was an effort that was led by Joey Logano and Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin. And we thought it was a terrific idea, right? And Jeff has been unbelievable, frankly, really being measured about how he's, you know, how he is speaking with the drivers and how he's speaking with NASCAR, and really is a trusted conduit between those two groups. And the Driver Advisory Council met on a number of occasions this year, and I think made some great gains on safety and some other things and other concerns that the drivers had, and could hear from NASCAR and work in concert with NASCAR to try to solve for some of the issues that they were having. But clearly, the communication between the Driver Advisory Council and the rest of the driver group was not happening. And so we'll take that on ourselves. And so we decided to have weekly meetings starting, you know, essentially 5 weeks ago with all drivers. It's not mandatory. The majority of the drivers have participated on a weekly basis. And I think the communication between the sanctioning body and the drivers over this past, you know, 5 or 6 weeks has completely shifted the narrative on what is, how the drivers are feeling about the issues, you know, the area of safety or the areas or other raceability, whatever it is that the drivers' concerns are and their private conversations that we are having with the drivers. I think it's, you can tell there's a difference, right, in how the drivers are speaking, even to all of you. But we certainly feel we're excited about the prospects. We'll meet with the drivers again tomorrow. And, you know, we are going to continue that moving forward into next year. We are going to, you know, until such time as the drivers believe that we are over-communicating, if there's such a thing, we're going to continue to have those meetings.
Okay, next we'll go to Bob Prochors up front here.
Bob Prochors, Fox Sports. The thing we keep hearing from the drivers is that William Byron's accident in California early in the testing process and him talking about how hard that hit was. I'm curious, did your data show something that the rear of the car and rear impacts were going to be less violent than they were for the driver? And then can you give us an update on what you've seen, any sort of data on what you've seen from the test that you had last month tells us that the rear impacts will be less hurtful for the driver?
Yeah, I think it's important, Bob, to go back. And I think one of the myths that was out there was around all the testing and what went into the next-gen car. So if you take a step back, there was more testing done for this car than at any time in our history, on track, simulation, you name it. And one of the things that got out was NASCAR didn't do anything, you know, after William Byron's incident. And that's not true. We actually did. We changed the rear clip of the car based on that information that we had, looked at a lot of tweaks to the car. And then as you fast forward for this year, as with anything that's new, you're going to learn, you're going to collect data, which we've done. Adjustments have been made to the rear clip that's already gone out to the race teams for next year. So I think that dialogue with the race teams, with the drivers, about how we continue to what Steve talked about is protect for the catastrophic is the number one priority. And then as you go, what are you learning about this new car? And what we're learning, it is those smaller hits, which we've never seen before in terms of a car that we've raced, are the ones we've really got to concentrate on. And that's why you're seeing the tweaks being made to the clip for those smaller impacts, even a bump on a restart, those types of things. And it's not just the car. I think the dialogue that we've had with the teams now involves, you know, how are you fitting in your seat, helmets, foam head surround. All those things are part of this dialogue, which is really, really good. and we're seeing some improvements on a daily basis as we look towards 2023.
Okay. Make it easy. We'll go to Dustin Long next, right up front.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Steve, last month on the pre-race show for NBC, you talked about, asked about the ownership group, and you talked about at the time that profitability was an important thing for the teams because that leads to better racing. But you also talked about you've got to look at expenses, and that's something that's got to be examined with the teams. You know, in the discussions with us, the team owners were talking about, you know, there's so much controlled expenses with the car. They're saying, look, the next area to cut, according to one of them, is you know, team personnel, and suddenly that can lead to massive layoffs. So when you look at the expense issues for teams, where do you guys see the fat that's there that needs to be looked at from the team perspective? And also, where are you in terms of talking with them since Charlotte?
So, Dustin, I think the it's really two things, right, which is we want to make sure that teams are profitable. It's important to us, and we fully believe that having profitable teams does lead to more competitive racing. So if you look at it, there are two areas to do it, right, which is increasing revenue, right, which is what we have every intention of doing with our race teams, and controlling expenses, right? The teams have asked us to control expenses. Where those come from, I don't know. And that will be up to the race teams to determine the best way to figure out how they would control those expenses. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, we have a specific discussion around what that would be or the mechanisms that we put in place. The teams have thrown out, the idea of having caps and floors and ceilings and luxury taxes. I mean, there are all kinds of different things and levers that we could pull. But those conversations, to the last part of your question, will be between ourselves and our race teams. And we'll continue to have dialogue with our race teams. The charters go through the end of 2024. We will have meaningful dialogue with our teams next year, I'm sure, and we'll figure out what is going to be a fair opportunity for all stakeholders, right? That moving forward in 2025, what that looks like. I don't know, but it will be absolutely have to be around both revenue increases as well as some type of expense restrictions in some way.
Okay. I think we have Greg Engel next.
Greg Engel with Forbes. I'm curious. Everything's been fantastic this year. The racing's been great, like you said. We've had lots of fans in the stands and everything. We can't dismiss the growing elephant in the room of the economy and the way that inflation's coming up. And we all want it to end suddenly, but it's not obviously going to do that. Are you working with your tracks, both tracks owned and not owned by you folks, to help maybe get some incentives out there to help react to that and maybe save some fans some money and get them to the track?
You know what, Greg, it's a good question. Listen, we are concerned about it. We have been monitoring it significantly. So we have something at NASCAR we call our Sales Academy, which is a group of sales folks who are selling tickets. And they are able to have real-time dialogue with our race fans to try to understand the difficulties that we've had. I got to be honest, I'm surprised that we've seen the type of consumer numbers that we've seen. Our consumer numbers are up over 20%. Ticket sales, 2021 to 2022. Despite, kind of what was happening with the gas prices earlier in the year, or, obviously the very true inflationary things that are happening, we haven't seen a decline in ticket sales. We haven't. We've actually seen the opposite. I don't understand it, frankly. It's a bit puzzling. We are one of the only sports, frankly, that have, by and large held ticket prices flat over the last 4 or 5 years. I think that NASCAR is one of the best places from a value perspective for our race fans, right? The opportunity to bring in coolers, trying to keep our ticket prices in a manageable place, having different options for our race fans to be able to, buy different levels that will work for their own budgets. So it's something that we're going to keep an eye on for sure, because we want to make sure that the grandstands are packed. You know, we've had 9 sellouts this year. Last year we had 5. We'll be double digits next year. We believe that to be true as we bring more races online, and we believe that we'll monitor it and make sure that we are continue to be a place for our race fans to get a good value for their buck.
And I think, Steve, just one thing to add to that too is just around the event and the fan experience. We have, and I applaud all of our tracks for doing this, really invested heavily. So Steve talked about the ticket pricing. I think we're proud of that. We're proud of our fans being able to come and attend an event, but then really focusing on what can they do when they come to the race. And hopefully you're starting to see more and more things happen around the racing. The racing's been really good, but we've got to entertain people who come, you know, not only just for the race, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
No, and I think it's a really good point that Steve makes, because we continue to invest more and more money to increase that race fan experience on a weekend basis. So whether they're more concerts and more opportunities to entertain the fans outside of what's happening on the racetrack. And to Steve's point, the racing's been terrific, but it's more than that. We want this to be something that they're going to look forward to all year long, and then just have a great experience when they're here.
Okay, so we'll go to Zach, and then we'll do Jeff, and then Cole.
Zach Sterniola with NASCAR.com. For you, Steve Phelps, do you foresee a time where the Cup Series races internationally?
I can send that to O'Donnell. I'm kidding. We certainly have nothing to announce here. Do we believe there's interest, north and south of the border specifically? Yeah, there's interest. There's interest from other, you talk about Chicago Street Course, Ben Kennedy and Steve O'Donnell, their phones are ringing from cities across the country that are like, we would love to host a NASCAR race at our city. And we do have calls coming, as I said, north of the border and south of the border. Whether that happens in 2024 or not, I don't know. What I do know is we're going to have continued schedule variation in 2024.
Going to Jeff next.
This is for O'Donnell. The next gen, obviously, on intermediates, seems like the reception has been pretty overwhelmingly positive, and then the short tracks and road courses are not as positive as they were. What are some potential changes or tweaks you might be able to make to help that?
Yeah, good question, Jeff. And I think you have to start with looking at really small sample size in terms of what we've been able to go out there and do, particularly on the short tracks, but for sure looking at some aero changes for both short tracks and road courses. We've got a lot of dialogue going on with the drivers in terms of, potentially looking at some power things. I think it's a little more complicated, but there are some things that we've looked at, even through Garage 56, that we found from an aero standpoint that could be put in place as early as next year for both short tracks and road courses. So and the good news is, continuing to dial in on the intermediates, which we believe we're in a really good spot, but then really focus on those short tracks and road courses. So a lot of work being done collectively in the industry to focus on those both areas.
Okay, we'll take Cole next.
Cole Cusimano with the Arizona Republic. For Steve Phelps, I like what you said about the face of the sport changing in recent years. So looking at the complexion of the championship for the Cup Series, there's a lot of youth there. Just what can you say about the youth movement and what this means for the future of the sport?
Yeah, I think it is, you look at the Cup Series specifically, and actually all four, there's a youth movement in NASCAR. And we saw that youth movement a couple years ago kind of start to take hold and take root. But you needed to win, right? So it's one thing to have young drivers come into our Cup Series, but could they win? And they've proven again and again and again this year that they can. And the face of our Championship Four in the Cup Series, average age of 28 years old, is pretty exciting. On top of the last 2 years' champions, one was 24 at the time and one was 29 at the time, and Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson. It's exciting. You know, I think what we are seeing is that we are seeing our sport, which we didn't for a long time, frankly, get younger. And I think the events of 2020 allowed the sport to get younger and more diverse. And that's what we've seen. And I am thrilled that these young guys are getting to race against, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers, right? Like Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. It's a really exciting time. But to see these guys that are going to be with this sport for another, you know, 15, 20 years, and watching their fan bases develop, right? Because there's people want to root for people that are like themselves, right? No one wants to root for me, right? It's just they want people that look like them, right, that have the same interests. So we're seeing a lot more influx of young people from a fan perspective, and a lot of that's being driven by the young drivers themselves.
Okay, next we'll go to Jenna Fryer, then Lee Spencer, and then Claire B. Lang.
Apologies, I have a few. On that question that you just answered, the younger drivers, you've got some good personalities in Noah Gragson and Ty Gibbs. You know, you've got some, but also the new car has allowed Daniel Suarez and Ross Chastain to shine, guys like that. So part of this youth movement, how much do you like these new personalities that are getting a chance to step into that absence of NASCAR star power you guys had been suffering from?
You know, seeing these personalities and drivers have their personalities come out, I think for a long time you had, you know, prior to social media, it was really the only outlet they had was you all, right? And that served this sport well for a long time. But I do think, you know, the advent of social media and drivers that have been able to create a personality, right, and show that is helpful. But you need to win, right? And I think that was part of the issue with some of these young drivers. They weren't winning. But now they are, right? And they're competing for championships, and you've got fresh faces that they're burst onto the scene. I mean, Ross Chastain, never been to the playoffs, right? He was, you know, in cars previously that were running, you know, towards the back of the field. And he and Daniel Suarez and Trackhouse and what they've done is extraordinary. But Bubba Wallace winning and other new race teams coming on board. But with respect to the personalities, we love it. I mean, Noah Gragson, I mean, fantastic. You know, and the storylines that are coming out of – that will come into the Xfinity Series tomorrow with the three JRM drivers and Ty, you know, that's good for the sport, right? You guys want something to write about, right? You want something to talk about on television, and that's what we want. And having guys that are brash and different and bold, that are creating their own fan bases because they are that, right? And so Ross Chastain has a terrific personality, and he backs it up on the track, and he's unapologetic about it. And so I think it's star power is critical, and we are going to embrace the star power and kind of put an accelerant on it because that will help the sport grow.
You mentioned that the charter system is up at the end of 24. Does NASCAR want to continue the charter system?
I think the charter system has been very good for NASCAR. I think if you look at it, there are many positive things. So what do you get when you buy a charter? You get three things. You get guaranteed entry into the race, which helps the teams from a sponsorship standpoint. You get essentially two pieces of revenue, fixed revenue, and then revenue that you compete for on the racetrack, which is great. I think both are important. And the third piece is governance, right? So Steve and the top competition guys, I mean, they've got meetings all the time working with the competition people at their race teams to move the sport forward from a competitive standpoint. So I would say the charter system, although not perfect, has worked really well. You look at the enterprise value, which I'm not going to get into what charters are going for and what they were at, but the number right now is a significant multiple of what it was 3 years ago. I mean, it is. We have people out there that want to get charters who are both in the sport and are outside of the sport that can't get them right now because the teams are holding them. That's their right, right? There's nothing, whether we want that to happen or not, there's nothing we can do about that. But to answer your question fully, do I think we'll extend the charters? I do. Do I think it's a good thing for the sport? I do.
But there's a possibility you might not.
There's certainly that possibility. And I don't want to get into the negotiating, you know, through you all. We'll get with our race teams and get there. My intention and all of our intentions is to renew these charters.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Next one, we'll move on to Lee, then Claire, then Jerry.
Just one real quick follow-up on what she was asking, because I think you mentioned if a new manufacturer came in that there would be – you would allocate additional charters. So would that kind of change that dynamic?
I think we have the ability to do that. But even with – if you look at the landscape today with the ownership and the number of charters we have, a new OEM coming in, we certainly would want that OEM not to be blocked from coming in, so that's why it was put there. But I think best case scenario for us is to have one or more of your existing charter teams have an affiliation with an OEM. I think that's important as we continue to grow to make sure that OEM support is throughout the field, and that's going to be a real key for us to look at going forward.
And I think you mentioned the OEM, you know, potential of OEMs coming in the other day. I think you talked a little bit about that the other night. Is there any fresh news?
No fresh news other than there is ongoing dialogue, and I think it's a really complicated time in the auto industry in general. And so balancing that in terms of, you know, what is the sport going to look like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now. The good news is, as you heard Steve talk about, the growth of the sport, the eyeballs, the interest. So no matter what you're racing, that interest is there. But I think the ability for us now to line up of, you know, what type of engine and what type we do across all three national series gives us a really good opportunity.
And finally, you can't turn on a TV here in Phoenix without seeing all the political vitriol, right? How do we cool that temperature down here among our race fans so we don't have the let's go Brandon mentality out there? How do we become more inclusive and let people know that we're attracting all, you know, walks of life and not just one segment of the population?
Yeah, I think the good news, Lee, is that if you go to the garage tomorrow or go to the fan zone, right, and you look at the changing face of NASCAR, it's there. You know, we want to put on great racing, right? And we want to make sure that everyone feels welcome and inclusive when they come to our racetracks. It's important. I think we've made great strides in that area. Are there other things that we would look at to do to try to make sure that we are doing exactly that? You know, we want people on the left, we want people on the center, and we want people on the right, right? And we want people that look differently, old and young, and people of color. That's what is a healthy, successful sport. And that's what we strive to be. And we've made some good strides thus far, but we've got some work to do as well.
Okay. Claire, and then Jerry, and Jim Utter.
Claire B. Lang, Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. It's refreshing not to have you, and it seems not that long ago you were talking about headwinds. And now it's when I think about the challenges, as we've been talking today, it's more internal, like how do you capitalize on all the opportunity that is coming NASCAR's way, the business model, the sport, the car safety, the next-gen car, team negotiations. For all the fans listening on Sirius XM Live right now, you know, it strikes me that the TV deal is so big for the fans that finding where the races are on is a challenge in maybe the Xfinity series, that some of the things that are coming our way as a sport that are challenging, we may not be talking about the things outside but more inside, right? So for the fans, what are your challenges that are the headwinds of yesterday that you're not facing now, but also the TV deal and how the – where fans can find the racing, what you see in the looming future there?
Well, I would say this, Claire, on the internal headwinds, fans don't care, nor should they, right? Fans want great.
Correct.
They just want great racing, right? With brash young drivers like Noah Gragson, right? Or, you know, the Hail Melon with Ross Chastain, whatever that is. And that's what they want, right? They want competition on the racetrack with the driver that they want to win. And I think the great news is that's what they're getting. So we'll deal with the internal headwinds, if that's the right word, right, to make sure that driver safety is paramount in making changes to the car to, you know, soften up the rear. And, you know, with respect to where we go from a television standpoint, you know, our relationship with Fox and NBC has never been better, ever. It is at a level that we haven't seen from a television perspective since the early 2000s, when kind of this whole new model came to be. And that's done through a lot of hard work. It's done because the sport has, its ratings have stabilized and have grown. I mean, you look at our share over the last just 2 years. Share this year for NASCAR Cup races, plus 11%. Share last year for NASCAR Cup races, plus 14%. So our share has increased in 2 years by 25%. While our friends at Fox and NBC have sold out their inventory, see CPM increases. And, you know, the sport is having a moment on television, but it's also having a moment on our own digital and social channels, our own channels. You know, we've on NASCAR Digital, we haven't seen numbers in NASCAR Digital this high since 2005. So there's something that's coming here. I'm not sure where the future is going to look like, Claire, with respect to our media partners. I do know that it will go through NBC and Fox, and whether there are additional folks that want to come bid and we get to that particular point, I have no idea. I do know that there is a significant amount of interest in NASCAR from those that are not our incumbents. And that's a good thing for our industry, right? Because our media deal, it feeds a lot of mouths in this industry, and it's important to do though. It is the future of what healthier teams look like. It's the future of continued investment in capital at our racetracks and continual investment in expenses around creating better fan experiences that we talked about before.
And real quick, Ross Chastain's move at Martinsville, whether or not there's a rule, you know, applied to it, what did that do? How much attention? How can you put kind of into words the effect for NASCAR of what happened there?
I'll start, and then Steve can... he can jump on because it's a cool thing. I unfortunately was not at the race. I had a bout with a sickness, and so I couldn't be there. So I was watching like a significant other amount of other people watching on television through that lens. It was hard to understand what was happening. I just couldn't process it, right? And I think that a lot of people had that same thing. Like, what? I don't know what just happened. Because it was something unique and different that hadn't been done before, or certainly not executed, right? I think there are others that have tried it. But he not only tried it, he made it work. And if you look at the social media numbers alone, over 100 million views of what happened on Sunday afternoon. So what does it mean for NASCAR? I believe that we're going to get new race fans, right, that are going to tune in on Sunday to see what's next, right? What is going to happen on the racetrack on Sunday? And I will say this, I'm sure Ross Chastain has a lot of new race fans for what he did. And it's going to be something that will go down in the history of, I'm sure Winston is looking at that and figuring out, is there an exhibit or a loop or something that's going to happen around what that is? Because it was historic.
I think, Claire, it's also important to talk about it's a little bit a product of our format, which doesn't get talked about, I think, enough. And it's a really unique part of NASCAR that's allowing for this. Sure, there's some challenges, right, and it raises some questions about certain moves, but it brings so much intensity not only to each and every cutoff race but each and every round. And I think the objective of this was to make sure that, you know, when we go to that second race of the season, winning matters. Winning stages matters. Where are you at in points? And you're seeing it each and every race. No way that move happens in our history without the format that we have. And that's a good thing, and that's really neat to see. And we got to continue to work now with the race teams in the off season. There's a lot of dialogue, of course, of what do you do. But I think we've been pretty frank of, you know, we're going to officiate the race the same way we have for the first 35 races.
All right, we're getting close to the ARCA start time, but we'll try to get as many as we can here. We'll go with Jerry next, and then Jim and Kelly.
Jerry Jordan, KingTheTires.net. I got one for each of you. And Phelps, for you, so you talked about, you know, where NASCAR is going from a diversity standpoint. You brought on Latasha Colley for here. You moved Julie to Chicago. Things that internally you're doing. But next year is going to be the 75th anniversary of NASCAR. What bigger things do you have, not just from, social aspects of it, but for the sport itself? And where do you grow? What announcements do you set up to make this such a great year for your Diamond anniversary?
Well, I think some of it, Jerry, is just kind of more of the same. So that, you know, to Steve talked about working on and improving racing at short tracks, racing at road courses. Although I would say that you look at the storylines at some of the short tracks and what has happened, and also the road courses, pretty extraordinary. With that said, we will iterate on this car just like we've iterated on every other car we've ever had, frankly, to try to make it better from a racing standpoint and from a safety standpoint. The DE&I efforts are going to continue, right? So we are going to craft, you know, additional relationships that we have and partnerships that we have, doubling down on what we do with the Boys and Girls Club, the successes that we've seen for Drive for Diversity, some of the other areas that we have, from a partnership standpoint that really speak to what's happening in the African-American community, what's happening in, you know, the Hispanic and Latino community, what's happening in the LGBT community, and frankly, what's happening with women, right, to draw them into the sport in greater numbers than we've seen. And so we're going to do that with all of what we do, whether we're talking about content, we're talking about, race for the championship. The audience is 10 years younger than the audience that's watching on television. And by the way, it's 60% female. Which is reversed on our television deal when people are watching. So it is really working and collaborating with our industry to just get better. And it's the key thing, frankly, is going to be investment. We are going to continue to drive investment into those areas that will drive the sport forward.
And OD, for you, there was talk earlier this year about the test thing, the series exhibition with electric vehicles, hybrids. Can you talk about where NASCAR's at with that? We've heard that it's kind of fallen off, and maybe that was because of some manufacturer's aspect. But where is NASCAR on moving forward with hybridization, electric vehicles, and whatever series that might have been, or if it's still in the works?
Yeah, I think we're taking a really holistic approach across all of our series. So, you know, it's not just electrification. We are still moving forward with our existing OEMs. To look at putting a car together, how does that look? You know, what's the entertainment value around that? You know, what's the raceability? So those plans are moving forward. You've also got to look at, you know, fuels in the future. How's that going to affect things? You've got hydrogen. You've got all kinds of things to look at. And the good news for NASCAR is we're positioned really, really well across all three of our National Series platforms. So, you know, and you've also got IMSA. And the ideal world for NASCAR is that you can show up at a racetrack and you can see any form of motorsports you want, any particular type of power, be it electric, hydrogen. You know, you want to see some loud, you know, engines going out there, that's NASCAR too. So all that's going on behind the scenes. It's a delicate balance with the OEs. Some are, you know, really all down one lane. Some are all over. So our job's to manage that. But at the end of the day, our job's to put on entertaining races. So I guarantee you that you'll hear from Steve, you'll hear from Jim France. If it's not entertaining, we're not doing it. And so we're going to make sure that whatever we do is going to have that aspect for the fans.
How soon do we expect more info?
So I think you'll see it as soon as next year. You'll start to see some things in terms of development. And we're in all of those lanes in terms of on track, still targeting 24. But you'll see us, you know, do a lot of different things during next year also.
Okay, I think we got time for just two more quick ones. So Jim and Kelly, if we can limit it to just one question, please.
For Steve, Odie, this is kind of like an officiating question. There were some instances this season where in to calls that were typically made would typically be made in course the race ended up being officiated or decided days after. Also, we had some instances, and you talked about this on the radio, of driver-to-driver confrontations that may be leaning a little bit too much towards the Wild Wild West. I just wondered, in the off season, what, if anything, do you guys plan to do in addressing those issues?
Yeah, good question. And all in all, Jim, I would say for the amount of races that we have and the number of calls we have to make or not make, pretty good success record. Having said that, you can always do better. And one of the biggest challenges in our sport is there's no timeouts. You know, we don't send it back to New York or somewhere else. We've got to make an instant call, and we've got to live with that. And that's really reliant for us on the technology in race control. You know, we rely heavily on our television partners who do a great job, but it's not their job to officiate the race. So if we are missing a camera angle, that's on us to go out and fix and make sure we have those things in place. So if you take Texas, for instance, you know, one of the angles that we should have had in race control, we didn't. Next week, we did. We had every single in-car where we were able to see it. So we'll go back and make sure that, you know, where do we make mistakes? What technology do we need to really make those decisions in a more timely fashion? Because we want to make those at the racetrack versus during the week. And the second part was around our drivers. So we've been very vocal on we don't want to see anyone using their car as a weapon on the track, right? That's number one. And the drivers have been vocal in saying, you know, let us handle our business ourselves. With that comes a balance, though. And I think you saw that balance last week. And I would say that's right at the line, if not crossing the line, in terms of the Xfinity Series. But if you look at how we have officiated those calls this year, we have not issued any penalties. So our job in the off season will be to talk to the drivers, get their feedback on where should that line be. It's still up to us to make the decision. But I think you'll see some more consistency in terms of what we may do and react to what happened last week with a penalty of some kind for 2023.
All right. Our last question comes from Kelly.
KellyCronoRacer.com. OD, I guess along those same lines, because I wanted to ask about Austin Hill, because you had said on Sirius at the beginning of the week that it was over the line or it was unacceptable. Excuse me, I don't remember your exact term. But then we didn't see a penalty. So do we now interpret that as what happened last week is acceptable?
And that's where I was going with it. I think if you looked at, and I did say that on the radio, and when we got together and looked at the team and how we had officiated this year, we hadn't reacted. And so we looked at it that, yes, probably crosses the line, but in terms of what calls you've made, who's been fined, where were points taken away, we hadn't done anything. So we elected, right or wrong, to move forward, get through this year, and then look to make a rule change. We are sitting down with Austin at 1 o'clock. So we'll make sure that our message is delivered to him. And we'll make sure that we feel like we're in a good place to go out and race. And if we're not, we still have the option to react.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Sincerely appreciate your time and energy. I'll just turn it back to Steve one last time for his final thoughts.
Yeah, guys, I just want to say thank you for all you do. I think we have a historic weekend and really excited to see the racing this evening. Tomorrow and Sunday. The grandstands are going to be packed. Go out to the Midway. It's going to be an energy there that, you know, we haven't seen before. You know, camping is, we can't fit another camper anywhere. And so we think this is a terrific market for us. I think we're going to see three great races over the next 3 days. And I'm sorry, as well as ARCA right now, which is why we're finishing. Three National Series races and our ARCA West Series. So excited about that. Again, thank you for all you do. We appreciate it. And we will see you this weekend, and then we'll see you back at the Daytona 500 in 107 days or something like that. 106. Off we go. Thank you for that. Thank you, Frank Kelleher. Just trying to get you a plug there.